Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
As the law year began for 2018, the Catholic Archbishop of Sydney, Anthony Fisher, warned that militant secularism is in the air and, like other isms, colonialism, sectarianism, racism and even sexism, it threatens to unravel Australian respectfulness in religious matters and unravel the historic balances between church and state. His comments came at the Red Mass. It's been celebrated at the start of the law term each year since 1931, and it celebrates ideals like the separation of church and state, and indeed the separation of powers between government executive, the judiciary, and the parliament. These are bedrock ideals on which our democracy depends, and they could indeed be threatened if society drives religion out of the public square. I spoke with Archbishop Fisher about his Red Mass homily and his upcoming submission to the Ruddock Inquiry on religious freedom.
The two reasons it's called red is because in the medieval times, the senior judges dressed in red. And so when this practice of having a mass at the beginning of each legal year to pray for justice, for inspiration for the judges, took place, the judges themselves were dressed in red, but also the priests dressed in red because it was a mass of the Holy Spirit, calling down the Holy Spirit like the tongues of fire at Pentecost. So both sides were dressed in red, and that's why it's still called the Red Mass all these centuries later.
Now, it immediately brings to mind the debate of this year, I think, for Australia, which is, loosely speaking, the role of Christianity in the public, well, the role of religion of any kind in the public square. I do note that there's a secular movement that's kind of gearing up. I think they're launching a new organisation next, maybe even this month. And they're sort of saying things like, yeah, well, look, have your own religion, but don't let religion impact at all on policy. We shouldn't allow religious people to influence policy. I imagine those people would also say, what on earth are we doing inviting religion into the courtroom?
Well, I think this is a major misunderstanding of religion and of human beings, basically. We're not people with multiple personality disorders who are religious one moment and we switch off and then become secular.
Yes.
We all bring our faith, our values, our relationships, things most precious to us, to every aspect of our lives. And it'd be very strange if the judges switched off some part of their mind or their heart when they were exercising justice. In fact, the last thing we'd want would be for them to become just like robots without bringing precious values and emotions and relationships into their consideration. So I'd be saying that these evangelising secularists at the moment who are trying to tell religious people to check their faith in at the cloakroom and don't dare bring it into court are really trying to impose a different faith, their own particular set of values and concerns on everybody else, and trying to tell the rest of us, who are the great majority of us who do have faith, that we're not allowed to be ourselves. We're not allowed to bring what's most precious to us to our public life.
It's a specious argument to say that morality exists in it's possible to have a moral vacuum, effectively, within which you operate. So if you say, all right, well, we're not going to adopt moral religious principles in the making of laws or the organising of society, then you say, well, what are you going to base your morality on? And the secularist can't just say, well, it's some sort of, well, I suppose some would say it's a natural human morality. But then one is entitled to ask, where do you get those values from? What are your values? Where do they come from?
It's quite so. There's no neutral position on values. You either name them publicly and let people examine them, which is what Christians and other people of overt faith do. They tell people what their values are and where they come from. Mm. Or, as I think is happening here, you're more secretive about them. You pretend to a kind of neutrality or value-free position, when in fact you're bringing a whole lot of clear positions with you and seeking to impose them on others. And I think if we're going to have debates about church and state, about the place of faith in the public life, then all sides need to be honest about what are the values they're bringing with them and seeking to share or even impose on others.
And so I'm sure you're making a submission to the Ruddock Inquiry. Are you able to tell us what will be in that?
Yes, I think particularly in the wake of the changes to the definition of marriage last year, many people were concerned that religious institutions that maintain a traditional view of marriage might well face challenges regarding their ceremonies and their sacred places, or their employment and enrolment and accommodation policies, or the message they preach or curriculum they teach in their schools, or their charitable status or their eligibility for government grants and contracts, that all these things might be up for grabs in a society that has accepted a change to the definition of marriage and in which some people are quite aggressive in wanting to stop anyone having a contrary opinion or a contrary position. Now, that's so for institutions. Then you think of individual people of faith who may well find themselves the victims of what people are calling lawfare, people that use the discrimination courts or other aspects of the law, or disadvantage in employment or commerce or parenting or other parts of life, to disadvantage faithful Christians or others who hold or dare to voice a position in favour of traditional marriage or some other traditional value. And so we're going to be saying loud and clear to the Ruddock Inquiry that institutions and individuals need protections. We're not looking for exemptions as if we were some kind of quirky minority that we're making space for their strange ideas. Mm. What we're looking for is respect for a positive value, which is freedom of religion, freedom of conscience and associated freedoms of speech and association, that be honoured in this community as it generally has been in the past. Not always, not in all circumstances, but generally we've been pretty good at this in Australia, but there are threats to it at the moment and we need some reassurance in this area.
There is an author, Rod Dreher, he's written recently about a thing called that he's describing as the Benedict option. And he's in the United States, but he's suggesting that we're coming to the stage where the church, church rules that kind of became enmeshed with the society in Rome, under Constantine, that's decoupling now to the point where churches, religious people, religious communities might effectively become sort of closed communities after a Benedictine sort of theology. Is that your view or is that too extreme?
I think there's some truth in that, but I wouldn't go all the way with it.
Yes.
I think the idea that Christians do need to have a clear sense of what they stand for, and in cultures that are hostile, at least in some ways hostile to their values, they will need to support each other and be perhaps a bit more inward-looking, a bit more circling the wagons to help each other to keep up their family life, their
But do you mean that in a monastic sense or in more of a circumspect sense?
Yes, that's where the idea of a Benedict option comes from.
Yes.
That after the collapse of the Roman Empire, the monasteries were the place where Christian culture, books, values were cultivated and preserved when much of the rest of society was falling apart. And so the thought is some parallel today, not literal monasteries, though those are important too, but that communities of the faithful, that families supporting each other and parish communities, Christian communities, take on a role of helping to support each other in living Christian beliefs and values in a hostile world.
Mm.
I think that will be increasingly important, but I wouldn't want to yet give in to the idea that we're like at the, after the fall of the Roman Empire, that it's going to just be chaos now in society and endless hostility to Christians. I think there will be rivalry for people's hearts and souls. There will be different conceptions of the good and of what kinds of laws and policies we should have. But I think we do have to stick in there with the society, trying to make it better, trying to be yeast in the loaf, and not withdraw altogether to the sidelines. So I'd say a bit of the Benedict option, yes, but I'd want to be in there trying to make our community, our whole society, the best it can be as well.
Yes, I like that. So this is an active, living out an active faith. And if we were, as a result of the secularisation argument in our society, if we were to withdraw to monasteries and institutions that look like monasteries, like the old idea of a closed school, for instance, it seems to me that we lose the ability to influence for the gospel, and that ought to be surely what we're on about.
Yes, yes. So I think that the truth of this is that in the past we may have relied rather too much on the culture to carry us. If we're in a Christian culture, it was transmitted almost automatically by our laws and the media and so much else around us.
Yes.
That can't be presumed anymore. We will have to be a bit more self-conscious at supporting each other as Christians, as believers, in holding to what's precious to us. But we shouldn't give up on the culture around us. I think we should be very, perhaps more determined than ever to be trying to influence the direction of our society and the institutions that underpin it.
Marvellous. Thank you for your time.
Great to talk to you, Stephen.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.